Okay, good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming to learn, especially tonight. It's a very important time to come to learn. I'm sure all of us are, I don't even know what the word is, are dumbfounded, are shocked, and don't really know how to react to the news coming out of Meron this evening. I just saw that Rav Avram Shor sent out a note to his shul in Hebrew. He sends all of his notifications in Hebrew, and he writes, "La'or habesura she'igia lanu me'ir Meron, in light of what we've heard from Meron, Hashem yirachim aleinu, Hakadosh Baruch Hu shav rachmanus, v'anu zukukim l'rachamim merubim. We require a lot of rachmanus from Shemayim. L'kol elu atzrichim refuah, for all those who need refuah. The kashma odl hisrachez karaui." It's disorienting. It's hard to even focus. It's hard to understand. It's hard to wrap our minds around what we're hearing about. He says now is not the time, even though tonight, Lag BaOmer, is normally a time where a lot of Jews are dancing and celebrating and singing. Now is not the time to do that. So what is it a time to do? Everyone should leave their house and go to the Beis Medrash to learn. She has zuchus l'kol atzrichim Yeshua, and that will be a zuchus for those who require Yeshua. Ula'ore rachamei shamayim merubim, and to bring about a lot of divine mercy. Mi ya'amin shebayom kazeh. Who would believe that a day like this, b'makom asimcha, in place of the joy, yera ason nora kazeh, that such a terrible accident would happen? Leiv mi lo namas b'shama b'sura, whose heart doesn't melt when you hear about what is happening. Bo kulchem l'modu l'spale l'ore rachmei shemayim b'yom anora. So let's all come learn and daven to bring about divine mercy on this terrible day. U'lekabel al atzmenu kal echad ve'echad ve'hitiv drachav u'leshaper ma'asav, and we should be mekabel on ourselves to do better. V'Hashem atov yinachim amo Yisrael, and Hashem should bring comfort to His nation. V'l yishma od shod v'shever b'gvaleinu, we shouldn't hear of such things among our people anymore. Avram Alevi Shor. I think that was just very well said. And I mean, I don't know how, if I assume this isn't news to everybody, right? I'm getting calls now from Talmidim. They were planning on going to a new square, to this place, that place. I don't know how a Jew can celebrate on a day like today, on a night like tonight. And I would just urge us all to maybe fight the temptation to react in the ways that we typically react in 2021. And what I mean by that is to find all the most gruesome images online, and look at every, you know, just realize, if you're seeing a gruesome image, or you're seeing an image of a body lying there, that body is somebody's father, somebody's brother, somebody's son, and to satisfy our curiosity over, our magnetic draw to tragedy, it's not worth it. It's not something that we should be consuming. It's not beneficial, it's not helpful, nor is it helpful for people to react by talking about, how this could have been avoided, what they did wrong, you know, why are so many people there, what did the government do wrong by allowing it, what did this group do wrong, that group do wrong. That's not for now. That's for next year when they're planning what they're going to do next year. For now, tefillah. For now, Torah. For now, we reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We need Rachmei Shemayim. There are a lot of people that are in need of Rachmei Shemayim. Anyone who is in Meron today, which is hundreds of thousands of Jews, is completely shaken up by what happened. I just spoke to some people in Eretz Yisrael who were there, who left an hour before all this happened, and they can't. I just spoke to them. It's 4 a.m. in Israel. I just spoke to them. They haven't slept. They can't sleep. They can't. Everyone is completely shaken up, as a Jew should be. So there's really no better thing to do than to come and learn Torah. And obviously the shiur was scheduled anyway, we were going to learn anyway, but it's totally, totally appropriate. That's the right thing to do at a time like this. So, okay, so let's get started. So we last week We did one Mishnah each week. So we're up to Perek Aleph, Mishnah Gimel, from what I understand. But maybe just one more word about the very end of Mishnah Beis, because we didn't really get a chance to discuss it in detail. At the end of Mishnah Beis, we said that Al Shlosh Dvarim Ha'olam Omid, that the world stands on three things, Al Torah, Al Avodah, Val Gmilus Chasadim, that the world stands on Torah, Avodah, and Gmilus Chasadim. We pointed out that you have to look at this Mishnah in light of the Mishnah later on in the Perek about Shlosh Dvarim Ha'olam Kayam, according to some Girsa'os, Din, Emes, and Shalom, and how they line up with Torah, Avodah, Gmilus Chasadim. But the idea that Torah, because as we're leading up to Shavuos, it's a Kedai to emphasize, particularly the element of Torah, the Gemara Misach Shabbos Daf Peches, that's where the Gemara talks about Kabbalah Satorah. The Gemara tells us how Torah actually is what allows the world to exist. The Gemara tells us that in the pasuk way back in Parshas Bereishis, Vayera Vayiboker Yom HaShishi. It doesn't say Vayera Vayiboker Yom Shishi, Yom HaShishi. So the pasuk is talking about the sixth day of creation, the day that Adam and Chava were created, the day that all the action happened in Parshas Bereishis. But it doesn't say Shishi, it says HaShishi, an extra hey. So the Gemara darshins, the Gemara learns from there that Melamed Shehisna Kodesh Baruch Hu Maisa Bereishis, that Hashem made it tonight, he made a deal with all of creation. Im Yisrael Mekablim HaTorah, Atem Iskaimim. Hashem said to all of creation, all of this is going to wait to that fateful HaShishi, that fateful sixth day of Nisan, of Sivan rather, when Klal Yisrael is going to be offered the Torah. And on their decision is going to hinge the entire existence of the world. If Klal Yisrael says yes, the world will continue to exist. If Klal Yisrael says no, everything's going to cease to exist. Ani machzir eschem l'sohu v'vohu, Hashem says, that the entire creation was there to lead up to Kabbalah Satorah, that all of it was for the sake of Kabbalah Satorah. In fact, Chazal tell us that, I think it's a Zohar that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu istakel ba'oraisa u'bara alma, that Hashem looked at the Torah first and created the world around the Torah. The Torah is the blueprint of the world, because the world is there only for Torah, for Hashem to be able to give us His Torah. When we say that Hashem gives us His Torah, it's really Hashem giving us a piece of Himself. It's that ability to connect to Hashem in a way that you can't do in any other way. There's nothing that that brings one closer to Hashem than the Torah itself. So that's the purpose of creation, right? The purpose of creation is Hashem wants to lehetiv im briyosav, is to do good with His creation, with that which He creates with us. And the only way that, or the ultimate good that Hashem could do for us, is to give us the opportunity to connect with Him. And there's nothing that connects us with Hashem more than the Torah Kedosha, more than the Torah itself. So the Torah, in a very real sense, is what is Mekayim the world. That's what the Netziv writes in his Hakdama to Sefer Shemos. The Netziv wrote many, many Svarim. He was Rosh Shiva, a very busy man. He was Rosh Shiva in Valazhin for decades and decades and decades. And he wrote Svarim on all sorts of topics, topics that nobody wrote about and topics that everybody wrote about. He wrote commentary on Chumash like everybody. He wrote a commentary on Shas like everybody. He wrote Shalos and Shuvos like everybody. But he also wrote commentary on the She'iltos Rav HaChaigon, which no one was learning She'iltos Rav HaChaigon until the Netziv came along and wrote a commentary on it. So now people had to learn it because you have to understand what the Netziv has to say. So the Netziv has a brief introduction to each Sefer of Chumash. So in Sefer Shemos, he points out that the Sefer is called by Chazal Sefer Hasheni, which is a strange name for a Sefer. I mean, you want to give it a name, you give it a name that like means something, like it's descriptive, right? Like Chazal elsewhere call it Sefer HaGu'ula. Okay, that makes sense. You'll call it Sefer HaGu'ula, the Book of Redemption. You know, the Sefer Bereish is called Sefer HaYashar, because it's about the Yasharim, about those who are most Yashar, the Avos and Imahos. They're that's what Bilam says, that Thomas Nafri, most Yasharim, that he wishes he could have the same fate as the Yesharim, referring to our Avos and Imahos. But Sefer Shmos, the Tziv says, for it to be called Sefer Sheni, what does that mean? That's like not descriptive at all. Why would you call it Sefer Sheni? So he says that Sefer Sheni is a name that's meant to connect. You can only have a second if you have a first, right? Meaning when you count, let's say Sfiras HaOmer, right? So if you miss a night, let's say, and then you just count the following night, so Salvation once explained that the reason why it doesn't work if you miss the night entirely is that you're no longer counting, you're just saying numbers, right? If I say 1, 15, 32, 7, that's not counting, that's just saying numbers. Counting means that there's a sequence and that everything is going in order. So when you're counting the books of Chumash and you say 2, this is the second one, it means that there necessarily is a first one. And the very identity of the second book is bound up in the first book. Because what happens in the second book? We get the Torah in the second book. And the first book was the book of creation. And the Netziv says that what Chazal is trying to draw our attention to is that everything that we read about in the first book was all to lead up to what happens in the second book. It was all for the purpose of the Kabbalah HaTorah that we have in the second book that we have in Sefer Shemos. So certainly Torah is one of the things that the Olam is Omed, that the world stands on, because the entire creation is based on the Torah Kedosh. Okay, so that finishes up from last week. So now let's start a new Mishnah for this week. Antigonus Ish Socha, Mishnah Gimel. Antigonus Ish Socha. So, Kibel Mishimon HaTzadik. He received a tradition from Shimon HaTzadik, meaning he was a student of Shimon HaTzadik. You know anyone named Antigonus? Anyone have a brother named Antigonus? No? Why not? It's a nice name, no? Why don't we use it? There are a lot of weird names being used. So what kind of name is Antigonus?
Greek.
Greek, right? That is clearly not it's not a Jewish name, right? Antigonus is very obviously not a Jewish name. This might be one of the rayos that there's no isser of giving a non-Jewish name. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the question, can you... Is it okay to give a child a secular name instead of a Jewish name? I know in my family growing up, me and all my siblings only have Jewish names. None of us were given non-Jewish names. So thank God, 4 out of 5 of us went into Chinuch and Klei Kodesh, so we never have to use non-Jews. But it's not so easy for people sometimes say, I can't imagine if I had to work in a secular environment every single day trying to explain Aryeh, like what does that mean? I remember once when my wife and I were on vacation many years ago, this was 2002, we were in Arizona, in Sedona, which is probably the most beautiful place in this entire country, and we were doing a jeep ride in Sedona, because apparently that's what you do when you're in Sedona, you gotta do a jeep ride, so it was together with other people, and everyone was being super friendly, which I can't stand, because I'm an introvert, I don't like talking, my wife loves it, she loves talking to people, and I just, like, I can't stand it, so I knew, like they said, it was, oh, so what's your name, so I was like, oh, no, this is going to be a whole conversation if I tell them my name, so I said, my name is Dave. My name is not Dave. It's not. My brother is Avraham David, so I guess his name is Dave. But I just said my name is Dave because I figured that would end the conversation, and it did. It worked. But then later in the jeep ride, as I was looking out the back of the jeep, someone said, "Hey, Dave, look over there." And I didn't respond. My wife started elbowing me. Dave, they're calling it. So we always had only Jewish names, but there are many people that give. I remember Elisha Graf telling me that he was talking to someone from the Bible Belt, in different parts of this country, and the person said, "Elisha, what kind of name is that?" The person said, "I think you're maybe pronouncing your own name wrong." It's a great thing to say to Alicia Graf. So, "I think you're maybe pronouncing your own name wrong." I said, "What do you mean?" "I believe it's Elijah." Meaning the person was thinking of Eliyahu HaNavi. "I believe it's Elijah." So Alicia said, "I'm a little disappointed in you. You live in the Bible Belt. Don't you know that Elijah's disciple was Elisha?" And the person was embarrassed that they didn't know that. But it's difficult. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a fascinating tshuva. Rav Moshe writes that you don't need to give Jewish names, meaning a name could be whatever you name the child. As someone said to me this week, I think in whose name, maybe the name of Rav Eliashiv, when people ask about naming their children unusual names, you can name your child Shulchan, you can name your child Kisa, you can name your child whatever you want, and that will be the name, whatever you call them is their name. So Rav Moshe said, "Oh, but you're going to tell me that there's a medrash that says that we only got out of Mitzrayim because we kept our Jewish names?" So Rav Moshe said, "Yes, Yes, that's correct. When we didn't have a Torah, the only thing that maintained our Jewish identity were those kind of issues of how we of our names, the way we spoke, the way we dressed. That's what kept us connected to our heritage. But now that we have the Torah connects us to our heritage. So the name is not as a critical component in terms of identifying as a Jew. Be that as it may, I think the practice is that we still give Jewish names. We may also give secular names if we feel that it's going to be easier for the child to blend in, to interact. I shouldn't say blend in, we don't want to blend in, but to interact with society. But Rav Moshe Feinstein did not think that that's a requirement to give a person a name. You know, when it comes to names, it's always a little bit funny. People sometimes have crazy ideas of what they want to name their children. I don't know, did I tell the story with Rav Vadia Yosef that someone wanted to give their daughter a crazy name, and it was like after a bird or something. There was some, they wanted to give the daughter a name. So Rav Vadia was doing the naming. So the father said the name that he wants to give, and Rav Vadia shook his head no. And the father said it again. Rav Vadia said something like Sarah. Called her Sarah, you know, just like he decided what the name is going to be. So the father, after davening, after it was over, came over to Rav Vadia. He was very angry. He said, "Arsene, that's not the name I told you." Rav Vadia said, "What you wanted to give her is ridiculous." And so the father said, "It's my choice, it's my traditions, my family." He had a whole thing. So Rav Vadia said, "Listen, your daughter's going to grow up one day. So one day when she grows up, you can pull her aside and you can have a conversation with her, and you could tell her what you really wanted to name her." And you could tell her that I'm the one that saved her. So Rav Vadia didn't take anything from anybody, you know. But Antigonus is really it's a Greek name. It's not a Jewish name. Antigonus, we don't know much about this Antigonus Ishsocho. He taught us one of the most famous sayings that we're about to learn in all of Shas. But we don't know really much. It's the only saying he has in all of Shas. We don't really know much about him other than that he was a Talmud of Shimon HaTzadik. And he was a Rebbe of the people that appear in the next Mishnah, right? The next Mishnah is going to be Yossi ben Yoezer ish Sredev, Yossi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim, Kiblu Mehem. So this is the order of tradition that as it goes down. So we know who his Talmidim were, we know who his Rebbe was, and he was during the period of Bayesheni before the Chashmonaim rebelled, and we don't really know anything other than this one thing that he says. Now in Avos Rabbi Nassan, it adds a little bit more detail into what happened. Because over here, let's read what the Mishnah. What did he say? Meaning, if all we know about him is what he said. Let's see what he said. Hu haya Omer. I mentioned last week that Hu haya Omer sometimes tells you about the person. Like it tells you not just the things that they said, but what their personality was. And especially when you only have one sentence from the person in all of Shas, it really probably should reflect like what his personality is, what he really believed in. So he used to say, Al tiyu kavadim amshamshin asarav al menas lekabel pras, ela hevu kavadim amshamshin asarav shelo al menas lekabel pras. Don't be like a servant who serves the master in order to get rewarded. Rather, be like a servant who serves a master not in order to get rewarded. And the Avos Rabbi Nassan tells us, well, before we get to the Avos Rabbi Nassan, how do you understand that? What does that mean? Like, okay, so I wake up in the morning and I want to listen to Antigonus Ishsocho, and I'm about to do my first mitzvah of the day. What should my mindset be? What should I be thinking about before I do my first mitzvah of the day? Or every mitzvah I do that day? If I'm a real Antigonus Ishsocho person, what would you say?
You should be thinking that you're doing this like Lishim Shemayim and not in order to like get schar.
So you think you're doing it not for the purpose of schar? Do I get schar though? Right, you'll get schar, you just shouldn't be thinking about that. So like, I know I'm getting it, but just like, don't focus on that, right? So that's the Pashup Pshat in the Mishnah. Apparently, says the Avos Rabbi Nassan, Antigonus Ishsocho had two students who didn't understand that. That when he said this, and since Hu Haya Omer, he would always say this, they got the impression that there is no schar, that one doesn't get rewarded. And they said, well, what am I doing all this for? If I'm not going to get rewarded at all, which obviously is a complete violation of what he said, because, no, the whole point is even if you're not getting rewarded, meaning when you're doing it, not almanas the kabbal pras, not in order to get rewarded, then that means that even if someone were to tell you you won't be rewarded, you would still do it, because you think it's inherently valuable. He had two talmidim who didn't understand this, and they assumed that there's not going to be any reward. And their names were Tzadok and Baitus. And they became the leaders of movements that were called the Tzdukim and the Baitusim. The Tzdukim were Talmidim of Tzadok, the Baitusim were the Talmidim of Baitus, and they really went far off from our classic method of observing Judaism, and that was all because they misunderstood this statement. So, in case you're not sure how important it is to understand this Mishnah correctly, you could be, if you misunderstand this Mishnah, it could lead you to become one of the villains in Jewish history. So we don't want to be that. We want to be the heroes of Jewish history, not the villains of Jewish history. So it's really incumbent upon us to understand this Mishnah correctly. So according to this Mishnah, if a person, let's say we're told one day, there will be no reward for any mitzvah you're going to get today. Whatever you do today, Hashem's going to ignore it. He's not giving you any reward. Would we still do the mitzvah? Would we still do the mitzvah?
Yeah.
Why? Meaning, if I'm not getting rewarded, then why am I doing it? I mean, what's the purpose? We always say, like when we're taught as children, you do mitzvahs and Hashem's going to reward you. We believe in schar va'onesh. You do averos and Hashem punishes you. Right? We believe that God works that way. That's one of the basic foundations of our belief. So why am I doing it if I'm not going to get rewarded? I mean, this Mishnah seems to be telling me that if I wouldn't get reward, if you live in such a reality where there's not going to be reward, then you actually should still do the mitzvah. But why? What's the purpose? So, in fact, they tell the story with the Vilna Gaon, I think, that in certain cities in Europe, there were times that it was very hard to find a kosher esrog. We take it for granted that we sit there looking carefully. We could have the most beautiful esrogim in the world. A few generations ago, they say that Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he was in Russia, had the same lulav for 4 years in a row. He would just, at the end of Sukkot, he would hang his lulav up on a hook in the shul and take the same lulav the following year. The chances that it was really kosher at a certain point, I don't know, but I guess it was freezing. It was Russia. It's probably freezing cold, but the same lulav 4 years in a row. People didn't always have access. I once met a Jew who was a Holocaust survivor who said that, you know, the Gemara talks about an esrog hakushi. What's a kushi? Anyone speak Hebrew? What's a kushi? Black, right? Ethiopian or black. So an esrog hakushi. What is an esrog hakushi? Esrog limar. Yellow or green? So what's an esrog hakushi? So this Jew, who's a Holocaust survivor, said that when he was growing up in Hungary, there was one year that none of the local communities, none of the neighboring communities had an esrog. There was one guy in some town that was not that far away that had an esrog. So what that guy did was he hired a non-Jewish wagon driver on the first day of Yontif. He passed the esrog around his entire shul. Then they gave it to the non-Jewish wagon driver, drove to the next town, and passed it around the entire shul. Drove to the next town, passed it around the entire shul. So this fellow said that he saw it, he was like the last shul that got it. So he saw this esrog after it was handled by thousands of hands trying to do the mitzvah. And he said it was black. From wear and tear, from handling. He said, I saw an actual esrog hakushi, and he said, I'll tell you, it was the most beautiful esrog I've ever seen in my life. Meaning that an esrog that had gone through that. So I remember we told Rav Shechter the story. Rav Shechter said, it's not what esrog hakushi means. Esrog hakushi means an esrog from Ethiopia. It's not that. But okay, but so that ruins the story a little bit. But it doesn't really ruin the story. Meaning that's the beauty of the story. Why am I mentioning this? Oh, the Vilna Gaon, 1 year, they couldn't find an esrog for him. So one of his Talmidim was out looking. He didn't really have Talmidim like in the conventional sense. The Vilna Gaon didn't like run a yeshiva or anything. He learned Torah all day, and sometimes people would come to talk to him and learning. He didn't really have you know, the classic form of Talmidim, like you think of as Rashi Yeshiva or Rebbeim having Talmidim. But someone went to, you know, he was the giant of the generation. He was, you know, Mishichmal, the Maila, heads and shoulders above everybody else. So they wanted to make sure he had a nice Esrog. So they finally found someone who had a nice Esrog. And they said, we want to buy this for the Vilna Gaon. And the guy said, okay, I'll sell it to you for the Vilna Gaon, but only on condition that I get the Schar Mitzvah. That the Vilna Gaon will take the Esrog, he'll do the mitzvah, fulfill his requirement, but I want all the schar that he's going to get for the mitzvah. So the guy who was buying it said, I can't, how can I give away the Vilna Gaon schar mitzvah? That's crazy. So the guy said, well, then no Esrog, no deal. So the guy bought it. He bought it and he figured he didn't know how to break this to the Vilna Gaon, but he brought it back to the Vilna Gaon and he told him, after he built up the courage, he told him the deal. And the Vilna Gaon was super excited. He said, when do I ever get to fulfill Antigonus Ish Socho? Here I get to actually serve Hashem, not Al Menasa Kabel Pras, because I know I'm not getting any reward for this. But it didn't really answer our question. So what are you doing it for? Meaning, if Hashem's not going to reward you, what's the payoff? So the Rambam has a beautiful, oh my gosh, it got late early. The Rambam has a beautiful interpretation of this. The Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayos, in the beginning of Perek Chelek, which is the last parak in the Maseches Sanhedrin, the Rambam says, I'll give you a mashal. He says, let's say you have a child that comes into school to learn. So children aren't always so interested in learning. So what do you do to get a child to learn? A 5-year-old. What do you do to get the child to learn?
Bribe him.
Yeah, bribe him. So bribe him with what? Candy. Right? Okay, now the child is in high school. Let's say candy worked. He was learning great. Now he's in high school. So what do you bribe him with then? Him or her, right?
Money,
clothing, I don't know, whatever. Then the child becomes an adult. The child's, 30 years old, right? So what do you bribe them with then, at that point? Kavod, you know, that I never understood it. When I was your age, people would talk about the Yetzer Hara that people have for honor. And I didn't even, understand that Yetzer Hara. What does that mean that people want honor? And I would look around at my friends like, none of us are going to be like that, because that's crazy. Who cares about honor? Why does that matter to people? At certain stages in life, people start caring about that. People really, it becomes a thing that if I wasn't invited to your simcha, or if I wasn't sat at the table that I wanted, people get really worked up about these things. They actually get upset about these things. And I remember when I was your age, I was just like, I can't imagine ever getting upset about something like that. But people actually do. It becomes a Yetzer Hara. So that what people actually are interested in at a certain point, it's not the clothing anymore, it's honor. They want kavod. But what's the real value of the learning, says the Rambam? Was the real value of the learning that the person got, that the child got candy? Was that what was valuable about it? No, the learning enabled the person to become a Talmud Chacham. It enabled them to get the honor when they were in their 30s, because now they're a Talmud Chacham and everyone honors them. But is that the end game? Is that the real value? Or maybe that's also just a quick bribe for what the real value is. And whatever the schar is, Olam Haba and everything else, says the Rambam, is that the real value? Is that the real value of the mitzvos? So the real value of the mitzvos is a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a relationship with Hashem. And having that relationship is priceless. It's worth everything. Everything else that we're told, the Torah doesn't really tell us about Olam Haba. It's not in the Torah, right? Not explicit, at least, in the Torah. The Chumash never tells us about Olam Haba. The Chumash tells us what the mitzvahs that you're supposed to do. It tells us about reward in this world sometimes. You have safta deganecha, you're going to be able to gather in your grain and you're going to have, a good crop or whatever, this world, and you'll have peace from your enemies and you'll defeat your enemy, whatever the promises are. They're all this world promises. But that's not the goal. The goal isn't really even Olam Haba. The goal is a connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam, a relationship with Hashem. That's the mashal that they give. The Dubna Magid gives the mashal, and I guess I'll close with this. I didn't realize. Does it go as quickly for you as it does for me? Probably not. But the Dubna Magid gives the mashal. He says, imagine a sar gadol v'nichbad ma'od. You have a very respected officer that goes on a walk with his goes on a trip with his family. And he stays at a wealthy man's home, at an inn, or a hotel or something, and the person accepts him, but Gadol, and he gives him all this honor, and he takes good care of him, and he gives him a 5-star experience. And then at the end, he says, "Nu, how much do I owe you? You gave me, you know, you took care of me while I was staying here, while I was on vacation." So he gives him the bill, and he says, "Okay, good." So he pays up the bill, and the fellow with his family goes on his way. And the innkeeper, you know, for a couple of weeks thinks about, "Wow, I had a nice chash of a guest," but he doesn't think about it much more after that. And then another Sar Gadol comes, another great, great, respectable person comes. And again, he takes care of him, he rolls out the red carpet, he does everything. And then at the end, he says, "How much do I owe you?" And he says, you don't owe me anything. Just the opportunity to be able to have you in my hotel, that's worth everything for me. It was just so good to spend time with you." So the first guy paid for the service, went on his way, had no complaints. He paid for what he got, and everything was good, everything was fine. But there's no real relationship with that homeowner that he stayed by, the innkeeper that he stayed by. The second guy got this, he not only got the royal treatment, but he was told at the end that you don't need to pay me. The greatest thing was that I was able to hang out with you, that I was able to spend time with you. And that's worth everything. You know, which one is more likely to be invited to this innkeeper's kids' weddings? Which one is more likely to have an ongoing relationship in the future? The person that it wasn't just a business deal, it wasn't just a barter of services for money, it was just because I wanted to be with you, I wanted to spend time with you. And that was worth everything. You know, a lot of times we think of the value of some of our, you know, some of our actions, and we don't realize that the greatest reward sometimes is just to be in a good place, to have proper relationships, to have supportive people around us, to have people that we love around us. That it's more valuable than anything you think you're going to get out of a friendship, anything you think you're going to get out of anybody else. There are some people that approach every relationship and every friendship with, "What can I get from this person?" If you do that, you're never going to get what you're really looking for. You're never going to get something that's truly valuable. Because that which is truly valuable is a genuine relationship. So, alachas kama v'kama, when it comes to our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's not a barter relationship. "Oh, I'll serve you, and therefore you'll give me a reward." No, the greatest reward is that I have a relationship, that I have an actual connection. And that's something, obviously, as you know, Lag BaOmer, we talk about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and we talk about Sisrei Torah and a depth of understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That itself is the reward. The deeper we understand the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the more deeply we feel connected to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that is the greatest schar that a person can have. And I just didn't read the last two the line of the Mishnah. Ve'imorah Shemayim Aleicha, and you should also have Yirah Shemayim. Because as much love as you have, you need to have Yirah Shemayim also, not just Avos Hashem. Maybe next week we'll pick up with that line, because I'm already over time. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. And thank you so much for coming. I really